How's it going, everybody? Appreciate you tuning in. On this episode, I'm going to be talking with Roy Holdford, also known as Curl, and Keith Robinson. And we're going to be talking about hunting new areas. We dive into things like reading hunting pressure, trying to figure out hunter tendencies, and using that to your advantage. We discuss different challenges that come when you hunt new areas, different things that you may learn in certain areas, and how that changes from one region to the next. And then we also talk about our goals when we go into a new area. Hopefully, there's some good information that can help you in the future. We did record this one at camp while it was raining, so you're going to hear a little bit of rain in the background, but hopefully that didn't bother you too much. Wanted to remind you guys that you can go over to thehuntingpublic.com. And you can check out all the stuff that we have for sale during the spring season. We've got a bunch of new designs for spring, turkey hunting related stuff, so we're excited about that. If you want to check it out, you can check the description of this podcast, click the link, and it'll take you right over there. We also have links to a bunch of other stuff that we use while we're out in the field, so if you have any interest, check it out. Also in the description, I put a link to Roy's YouTube channel as well. That way you can check out what he's been doing traveling around hunting turkeys. Thanks for tuning in. Let's talk about hunting new areas. All right, guys, we're turkey hunting, and we're actually rained out from turkey hunting. We're not turkey hunting, believe it or not. Sitting at the back of the truck, and it is raining. And it's been kind of slowing down, so we decided to try to record a podcast. So if you hear some light sprinkles, hopefully it's more soothing than annoying. We tried to find the best place to be where it wasn't loud. In the truck was loud. In the, I guess, gazebo areas that we found around, it was all just super loud. So
tin roof. Just
feel like
picked back up too, just in time.
Yeah, just in time for us to start. But it's just one of those days, and I guess in this one we're going to be starting the conversation just talking about hunting new areas, because we're currently hunting a new area for turkey, and we're definitely struggling. I guess you'd always hope that there's some amount of figuring it out that goes on when you go to a new spot, and then you kind of chip away at it and then eventually find some success, and that's always really rewarding. But in this situation, it's not going necessarily as planned, and that's okay. And we just want to talk about like what we're trying to get out of hunting new locations, and you know, some of the things that we like learning and the new challenges and everything like that. Just kind of elaborate on that.
I guess, how do you, like, first approach a new area when you first get there? Because it can be, I guess, intimidating in a way.
Yeah.
New country, just not familiar with terrain or vegetation, whatever it may be. It's like, I don't know, I guess, to throw a question there, what would you first, what do you first take in when you're going to a completely new area?
I think the number one thing is always just spending a lot of time looking at maps, and then whether it's deer, turkey, elk, it doesn't really matter. I don't really like being right close to a big city or a bunch of towns. Like, that's kind of important to me. And then the next step is just looking for habitat changes. I mean, this gets hammered home a ton, so I don't necessarily want to dive too much into that, but looking for some sort of habitat break, like timber cuts, I mean, fields sometimes, burnt areas, anything that's some sort of obvious change on the habitat. And then terrain-wise, I really always enjoy trying to find some sort of rugged terrain. I mean, when we're talking turkey or like elk especially, I really, really like that. But also for deer, I enjoy learning more and more about that, because I feel like that brings a whole new list of challenges that you don't always get everywhere. So I feel like those are some of the things, like right out of the gate, that I try to focus in on. And then ideally room to roam and different options, like not just one particular location. I mean, if I got a lot of time to look, like let's say I'm going into deer or elk season and I've got all summer to get excited about a spot, I want like, you know, 15 or 20 different options that I'm really excited about with no expectation of really getting to all of them.
Yeah.
I would say that's the start.
I think having options is huge. That's kind of what I try to focus on, like, the first couple of days when I'm in a new area. It's just, like, even if I do hear a bird, dive in on them and it doesn't work out, like, mm-hmm. I generally won't spend too much time the first day and mm-hmm. just try to, like, I'll keep tabs on them, but try to go and collect other options. And that's what Hayden and I did the first day, really. And honestly, opening day was, like, probably our best day, aside from the day that he left. We got pretty close that date, but opening day, found these farm birds that we've been mm-hmm. on for a couple of days now, and then very quickly backed out of there and went to another spot. And honestly, like, if we would have killed that bird, it would have just been sheer luck. Like, it was just one of those where he's gobbling 200 yards off the road. Mm-hmm. We got in.
The bulldozer bird.
Yeah, the bulldozer bird. Got in right on top of him and just, like, ended up spooking him. But I told Hayden, even if we had gotten that bird, like, we wouldn't have learned anything.
Yeah.
Like, it really would just have been luck. Yeah. And there would have been a little bit of, like, bittersweetness to, like, not really feeling like I learned anything about how to hunt this area.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
We had a very similar experience to that. I know my perspective, it was the first morning within the first hour and a half, and we were in this spot that it was really cool looking. I was really excited about it. And I was like, man, we get to hunt this for several days at least. And then that thing's gobbling and we start going down and you're looking out at all the country
that you haven't hunted yet.
Yeah. It's like, man, if this happens, we got to leave already. Mm-hmm. And now that compared to where we're at here on day 8 or whatever it is. And we've seen a lot more ground and learned a lot of cool things about it.
So now it's kind of like, okay, we'll take the easy route, but early you don't always want that. I mean, you would never pass it up, obviously, but there is a desire to learn. And I think that, you know, when we've been making these videos, I've often thought to myself, like, man, we could leave. We could go somewhere else. You know, we could always take some sort of handout. I mean, there's all kinds of opportunities for us to go, really, to go to private, or, you know, we get a lot of people saying, you know, you come hunt my property, I'd be happy to have you. While I appreciate that greatly, I think that's awesome. The reason that we don't do that is because we like going and figuring things out, trying to learn the challenges that are unique to a certain area, because they all have unique challenges. And we joke a lot about the toughest turkeys live here. Well, a turkey's a turkey everywhere. Every place, though, creates a new challenge. And figuring that list of challenges out, what they even are, and then overcoming those challenges is what actually makes the turkey tour or the deer tour or, you know, elk hunting a new place fun. Is you're just going, trying to figure out what that list of challenges is, figure out how you're going to overcome it. And I feel like, man, we could just go to a place where maybe we could roll in and, you know, you're always wondering, is it, what's the old saying? Like, grass is greener on the other side, right? We could roll down to a spot and hear like 3 turkeys, move right in and get one. Wouldn't that be sweet? It's like, yeah, it would be sweet. But think about how freaking awesome it's going to be when one's drumming down the pipe, you know, and we're shaking. Like, those hunts are the ones that really end up being the most memorable to me. The ones that there was some sort of, you know, I guess the kids are calling it a grind. You know, you're really working hard.
Yeah, you're
going to
break
trying.
It down.
Yeah.
You know, step by step. Yeah.
I have a little bit of a grass is greener streak in me. Yeah. And it came out in Alabama last year because I rolled in to a spot and shot one the first day I was there. And then they have the rule that you can't, like, shoot more than one within the first 10 days of the season or something like that on a specific WMA. So I, that afternoon, went and scouted another place, was there the morning, and then was like, yeah, I'm going to go somewhere else. Went to another place, scouted the afternoon, was there the morning, was like, not really feeling it. And then you just, like, end up wasting a bunch of time if you do that.
Yeah, well, that's the other thing. It's like, we run the risk, too, of finding pretty much exactly what we found, which is some turkeys, you know? And I think there's probably more here. Well, I guess we're starting to believe there's more turkeys here than what maybe we initially thought. just because the season's starting to change. Like, as I'm sitting here looking at what's surrounding us and how much it's changed since we got here, it's pretty wild. And they're definitely starting to move. We're starting to see hens alone moving away from, you know, the other groups of turkeys, and that's not something we were seeing.
Yep. We saw the day before our first season today.
Yeah. Which is crazy to think about. Wow.
Yeah, it really is. Mm-hmm. The first male bird we've seen.
Whoa.
Whoa. I think we've been close to a few.
Yeah.
At least
yeah,
I think. Definitely. But
the biggest thing that I want to get out of the experience is just learn something and just know that, you know, this is a challenge. I don't just want to go get one anymore. I think when I was a teenager, especially, for example, or even up into college, it's like, yeah, I want to go get one. And when you have limited time, there's nothing wrong with that mentality either. There is not. But, like, we have the opportunity to go travel to new areas, and we've got to see tons of new country just in the last handful of years. And when that's the case, you start to just really appreciate the things that you can learn from an area. I think that's the coolest part about traveling, and no matter what you're hunting, you just got this really amazing opportunity to learn new things that, you know, may be challenges that are only unique to that certain area or those habitat types or whatever. And then you get to also see the hunting culture too. Like, one of the things that I always find interesting, and I've kind of started saying for years now, is everywhere you go, there's a hunter tendency. And if you can recognize that throughout your experience there and just try to do something ever so slightly different, it doesn't have to be crazy different. But, like, a great example is we were hunting mule deer in New Mexico in 2021. And we started noticing that everybody was driving around. So they would be driving around glassing from the road. And while I believe that absolutely could work, by hiking up to high points, we were able to see country that you could not see from the road. And therefore, we were seeing bucks that I think were doing a darn good job of hiding from the normal hunter tendency, which was just cruise around and hit obvious glassing points. And I just think that the deer start to pick up on that in a certain spot. Or, like, for example, if you're elk hunting and you're just running around doing tons of bugling, but everybody else is doing that, then there's probably a good chance that's going to stop working at a certain point. So, like, just recognizing what that tendency is and then try to spin it, you know, in your favor a little bit. Like, just use that to your advantage, especially rather than getting frustrated at it.
Mm-hmm.
Turkey related, one that I always think about was we were hunting some big ridges in 2020. And I remember hitting some strange point in the middle of a fairly long hunt there where we had got one early. The confidence was really high early. And then because we got one in that particular location, we kind of moved to some different spots. And all of a sudden, the pressure increased. And it felt like everywhere we went, we were seeing a vehicle. But then we really started looking at it. And it's like, okay, every hunter is doing the same thing. They're parking on the top, taking the ridge out. And while that's an obvious advantage, when you're up high on a ridge, you can hear a lot down below you. It made us rethink our strategy, so we started focusing on areas that didn't have trails. We could get up to a high point, but then also hunt our way down into a bottom, and ultimately we ended up having some really good success later in the trip because we started recognizing that hunter tendency. You know, every hunt has that. I mean, another recent one is Florida. One of the most wild things that we saw there was every morning I started joking more and more. It's like, we're just waking up counting trucks. Like, we're not even going in anywhere because everywhere we go, they're not just a truck in the parking lot or the pull-off. It's like there's trucks stacked 200 yards down the road, the whole road. But by about 10 o'clock, there was, like, nobody. And then as the day went on, you just saw fewer and fewer people to, you know, the afternoon. You're talking none. We would drive around all afternoon and see, like, maybe one vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just crazy that was so consistent.
Yep.
Hunter patterns in new areas is interesting.
I think we have run into a similar thing that you were talking about, I guess, with glassing.
Mm-hmm.
Here with road calling, we had that incident where we heard a bird and heard two different people come down the road and try striking at it. I think maybe someone owl hooted, but I think several people were turkey calling at it, and the thing didn't respond, and they kept going. And then once the cars were passed, we owl-hooted, and the thing responded.
And what's also interesting about how we parked on that one is we didn't park in a position where we felt that he would hear our vehicle shut down, you know, whether it's stopping on the gravel, which is a pretty distinct sound, right? Like, popping, 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 stop. Yeah.
You can hear it for shut off. A long ways.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And because we did that, I think we were able to hear him pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So we hear him trying to get a pinpoint on him, and then we start hearing these other vehicles, and it's just, like you said, mm-hmm. as soon and as they call.
Similarly, I mean, the way things are set up and the way turkey hunting is a lot of times successful, there's a lot of ridgetop parking and people accessing from the tops. And then we've also been doing the same thing of just trying to walk in to find more creative listening points, especially because here the way the terrain is set up, like the distance of the hillsides and the folds that are in them, they can get into these pockets where they just disappear.
It's and that's been the number one challenge.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's thrown me off for sure.
Mm-hmm. Similar example was that power line bird in Florida. Mm-hmm. Like, he was in a power line very close to a road, and anytime a car would drive by, he would like kind of get a little weary and like run off a few steps, but then once he stopped hearing gravel pop, he was right back to doing his thing, spitting and grooming.
Yeah, we should tell a quick story here of that hunt, because we haven't really done anything on that one. So keep this in mind, everyone watching and listening.
Yeah, I'm working on that video right now.
Okay, so you'll be able to watch it on Roy's channel. But keep in mind that we're trying to film these hunts, so had this been a different situation and I was just out there hunting alone, I would have not put myself in this position. But I had shot a turkey already in the area, and Roy hadn't yet that season because you'd been filming a lot and, you know,
Cole
just taking turns.
Cole shot one the day before.
Yeah, taking turns.
For the first couple, like 5-6 days of the season. And
yeah.
Then, yeah.
So it's kind of just, you know, sharing the gun time. So I was planning on filming anyway, but we were also planning on leaving. Well, I was planning on leaving that day. So we had said to ourselves, all right, this is our last stop. We're going to listen here. And if nothing happens here, we're going to keep moving. And at this point, it was probably like 9:20, 30. Mm-hmm. And I told Roy, because we hadn't been walking much that day, and I get a little restless, I was like, I'm just going to go walking down this road, calling, and we'll kind of call back and forth to each other. You know, generally when you do that, it's pretty safe from the standpoint of, like, you're not going to just bump into a turkey too often. It has happened, but not too often. So I'm walking down the road, calling, listening, nothing's happening. It's good listening conditions, too, calm, just beautiful morning, really. And I get to looking at my phone. I'm like, man, there's a power line just 150 yards through that timber. I can just sneak through there and pop out and give it a glass. Like a binocular glass, not a glass call. So I walk out there, and I get about 50 yards from the edge of the power line. I get in this super thick stuff, and it's wet, and it's, I mean, we're talking like little trees that are like this big, and I'm, you know, snaking my way through it. And as I'm going through, I thought maybe I heard a gobble. And to this day, I don't know, and I don't know that I ever will, but it seems more likely that I did when you hear the outcome of the story. I get right up to the edge, and I start to kind of lean out, and I look up to my left, and standing on the roll of the power line, 50 yards away from me, is a tom just standing there looking. And he's not looking at me. I can tell he's looking through me. I'm just like, oh, here we go. So I look at my phone. Of course, you know, can't get a hold of Roy, and the plan was Roy to drive the truck up to me. Right about this time, I look at my phone, and I'm like, well, I'm going to have to just film this turkey with my phone. Right about that time, I hear Roy fire the truck up and start driving. And that turkey just looks and darts across the power line, gets to the other side. I'm like, oh, good. He's going to go in the woods. I'll be able to slide out of here, you know, get our gear ready and make a loop around him. Gets right to the other side and gets about 5 yards from the edge, and he just stops and looks up again. And as Roy rolls through, he just goes, and turns and faces right at me. And he's like 55 maybe at this point. And I'm just like, oh no.
And sure enough, just one of those deals. It's like it could happen a million times and you have a gun in your hand. And he would never do that. Yeah. I mean, I'm not kidding. I'm standing by a tree that's like this big. And the only thing that I think maybe helped me was the thick edge was back cover.
And he was also like looking into the sun.
Yep. And I had like a little bit of cover kind of down low. And I was just hunched over filming off the side of the tree. And I took like three different clips. I got a wide angle one. I got a close one. But he just comes through and just would do that half strut, spit, and just look. Spit, look, and the whole time he's just taking steps to me. Well, Roy goes up, turns around, comes back down the road, or I guess I'm assuming it was you, and at this point, no joke, he's 15 yards from me. And it's just, I mean, I could have shot him under the leg, I think, at that point, you know? And Roy comes past, and when he comes past the second time, he darts off again, and he does kind of give a couple putts, and it's like, he probably, at this point, can tell something's a little weird about where I'm standing, but I don't think he's bothered at all. Well, sure enough, I get out, get to Roy. We make a loop around him and eventually get him to gobble at, like, 10:45, maybe. Is that right? So about an hour and 20 minutes later, maybe pushing 11. We get him all fired up, but this time he's on the side of the power line that I had approached from, past the thick stuff in a more open edge. And we were trying to call him across the power line. And you'll have to watch the rest of the video to, you know, on Roy's channel to see the full outcome. But ultimately, that was just a silly one. You know, it's one of those deals where you'd never do that if you were not trying to film your buddies. You know what I mean? You'd walk out there and be like, if I'm going to go out there, I need to go get my gun. Like, you would think that. And I mean, that's happened to me twice now filming. It's because I've been... focused on trying to find a turkey. I did it one time where I pulled into a spot on a day just like today, and I stood there and I hit a call. I did have a tag both times too, so I could have shot a turkey both the time that I'm talking about with Roy and with Ted, but I dropped Ted off one time, hit a call, nothing happened, and I was just thinking, like, this just seems good. Hit a call again, pow, pow. And I remember, like, I'm standing like as far away from the truck as we are right now, and the bird gobbled, or two of them gobble, and I remember like looking at my gun, looking at the camera, looking at, you know, my gun again. I remember getting shells in my hand, and then it's just like, too late, dude. Like, I don't even have time. And I look over, I don't even have time to get the camera up. And I look over, no joke, full run around the corner and just see me and kind of like flap up and out of there. And later that afternoon, Ted got one of them. Yep. Super cool hunt. I mean, very, very cool story on that one, but similar frustration. Anyway,
the same day I met y'all.
Yeah, it was. Bit of a side tangent there. Quick storytelling moment, but I don't really even know why we brought that up, other than, like, I guess what is relatable is trying to pin more turkeys or pin more areas that you want to hunt.
It was on the subject of... like gravel popping and turkeys to hear that and not necessarily like knowing not to gobble to it. The hunter tendencies.
Yes, hunter tendencies. What are some other hunter tendencies you guys have seen over the years, like in any form of hunting?
I think your point about like owl hooting, like we were talking about locators earlier, I think like the classic owl hoot is something that gets used a lot, and we've kind of started toying with just like different locating techniques that aren't so predictable as just the
eight note.
Yeah, like people or turkeys hear that all the time, I'm sure, up on the ridge.
Yep.
Hollow hoots.
Especially around here.
Yeah.
There's a ton of owls around here.
Right. Yeah. Well, and that's the other thing. Like, you hear it from hunters, but then you also hear it from real owls, and, you know, it's not until they start really breaking into the crazy owl talk that you generally hear the turkey gobble.
I think doing more shrill, just like you were just saying, something that's more it's easier to hear.
They call it a shock gobble.
Something that's gonna make
shocking
them.
To the turkey.
Yeah,
like something that gets them to go.
Yeah, something that has changed in my opinion over the years is how often or how well, I guess, locators in general work. And when I was younger, hunting public lands, I was always hunting areas that were pretty pressured, and just between the gravel popping, the owl hooting, the striking off the road, I just witnessed many a times what Keith was saying in that. A lot of those things people were doing weren't working. I mean, I'd be sitting in there listening to a turkey gobble, hear somebody pull up on the road, hit a call, and the turkey not respond to it, them drive away and the turkey start gobbling on its own again. So I saw that and then heard people owl hooting like crazy, to the point where I just became shy to it. I just didn't do it all the way up until I was really through college. I never did any owl hooting. Mostly because I just started to feel like the turkeys were picking up on that. And I think that to a certain degree, that's probably true. If it's been way overdone, I do believe there is a point where, you know, it doesn't work anymore. But to your point too, taking it a step further and just trying different things, like if everybody's owl hooting, maybe they don't gobble to an owl hoot, but maybe they will to a crow call, or maybe they will to a coyote howl at night, which I obviously wouldn't do a coyote howl in the middle of the day as I'm moving in on a turkey, but, you know, maybe you use a crow call, or maybe you, I mean, Woodhaven makes a hawk call for a locator. Yeah, I mean, really, any sort of thing
that's pretty cool
is different. One thing that I've always thought would be really cool if you can learn how to do the noise is the pileated woodpecker.
Mm-hmm. I was just about to say that.
I mean, how many times have you heard that? So many times. Yeah. And I just think that, you know, thinking outside the box there is definitely important. But also not being afraid to be loud with it. Like, one thing that I had done was, okay, I'm going to owl hoot, but I'm going to be really realistic with my owl hoots and not do it too loud. But then over the years, I've started realizing Jake has told me a lot, you should owl hoot louder. And then Roy was just, and I were just talking about this a couple nights ago, you know, just do it louder. And then, no joke, two nights ago we were out roosting, and I did it with my call, which I think is very realistic and is loud enough. It has made them gobble already this season, but when I wasn't getting a response to that, I did it with my mouth, and I just raised the volume probably twice as loud. And very first time I did it, turkey gobbled. He didn't do it anymore, but that was enough to, like, say, hey, there's one over in that direction. Yeah. And I just feel that that's something that is kind of, changed for me.
Mm-hmm.
Also, even hitting a turkey call louder. Like, I used to be super shy to that, too, for the same reasons, listening to people rip loud calls. And I think that there is a point where, you know, if you're doing something too loud, too close, too abruptly, it's will spook a turkey.
Yeah. But if you're trying to locate one,
right.
Usually, I mean, unless you're just unlucky and he's like 50 yards over the hill, like.
But start quiet.
Yeah, definitely.
And then raise your volume.
For that scenario, start quiet and then raise the volume.
Mm-hmm.
And even on the same topic of like locating, like switch it up. If you get him to gobble to just like the regular like 8-note hoot, and he's not hitting it anymore, and you're still trying to like get a better pin on him, like just do a different noise. That happened to Hayden and I the other night, and it worked out. So
he did more of the wah 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 oh, and then boom, gobbled again. Yeah, I think that's something that over the years for me has just changed a ton. Really, I've just got to experience enough other people's approach to it, and that's another benefit of hunting and traveling is get to hunt with different people with different perspectives, and you start to see, okay, these things can work, especially when you sound realistic. Like, I think that's the other thing is, if you're going to turkey call really loud, like, still make sure that the cadence is right, you know? And I think that sometimes hearing other hunters calling, too, it's like their cadence is wrong. I mean, they're doing things that just aren't really realistic to a turkey, and that I think can also make a turkey shut up quick. Like, maybe from a distance he's hearing it and he's like, oh, I'm gonna gobble and get closer to that, and then he hits a point where it's like, I mean, that ain't even my kind. When the cadence is too slow is a common occurrence. Like, studying hens will tell you that there's kind of a base cadence there. It's not always going to be perfect, but you have that base, and then once you kind of figure that out, it can speed up a little bit, but it rarely is slower than that, where it's yelp, 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 yelp. What are some other things that you guys see in areas or
things
examples?
You catch yourself doing?
Yeah, catch yourself mm-hmm. doing. Here's one that we're doing right now, I think, is we're expecting to hear things up high.
Yeah.
Like, this terrain is unique in the fact that there's no uniform ridges necessarily, where other places I've hunted, even on this scale, still has some sort of uniform, I guess, finger ridge or secondary ridge, where maybe your top, you know, kind of goes up and down, has some high knobs, whatever, but then the fingers are more uniform, like they're all the same height, and they all go out about the same distance. And that can certainly vary. You know, one area you might have a ridge that, or fingers that go to a creek bottom that are a mile long. And another place you might have them where they go 300 yards down to the creek. But they're generally uniform, where I feel like here, we're seeing a lot of examples where there's one ridge that's super long and another one that's maybe not as long, but is taller. Mm-hmm. And then the next one over has like a strange saddle in it, and you can, you know, look from one finger through that saddle to the other finger that's way up high. And it's just, they're kind of all over the place in height and length mm-hmm. off the top. And I think as we've hunted this more and more, we're all realizing that every single time we think we're hearing it all, we probably ain't even close.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think that's been the most interesting challenge that we've faced here. And I don't think that we've necessarily figured it out, but we've at least figured out, like we've checked that as figuring out one of the challenges of the areas,
that's
of
my,
this area.
That's my biggest biggest thing I've learned, biggest takeaway from here,
mm-hmm.
is just learning more about what you can and can't hear,
mm-hmm.
you know, and something that Hayden and I would not have learned if we had
gotten
the one on the first day. So
yeah,
it's weirdly encouraging to like have that, where you kind of have that realization point and you think
there's actually more turkeys here than we thought.
Yeah,
I can get to places where I'm probably going to hear ones that I'm certainly not hearing from the road or even from a couple hundred yards off the road. There's very specific hearing pockets.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even, like, we were joking about the hearing cone mm-hmm. earlier.
Yeah,
there's
yeah.
little pockets where you can hear and then you can't. Knobs. There's a lot of what we would consider stadium ridges, mm-hmm. like you were saying, with imbalanced elevation and length.
Mm-hmm. But when we say stadium, you've got one that's lower or significantly lower, but everything around it, no matter what shape or height it is, it's taller than that one that's kind of on the field of the stadium. Mm-hmm. And when that's the case, a turkey gets behind that and you're way up here, I mean, good luck. Mm-hmm. Especially you throw water or wind or, you know, pines or some sort of vegetation that's mm-hmm. blocking sound, and it becomes way more of a challenge. And I think that something that's definitely helped me get better at that is hunting elk as well, because you have to kind of get creative there where, okay, where can I actually go to where I'm going to be able to hear stuff? And then when you just get reps all turkey season, all elk season of doing that, you start to kind of say, hey, I'm probably not even hearing what that is over there, because in this example, it sounded like this. So over here, there's no way I'm hearing it, or I should be able to hear that. You know, I'm not going to worry that there's maybe one over there. I'm not going to waste my time walking over there when I know I should be able to hear that. And you just get more and more experience with that. So it's like, I feel like going into it, it's something that we harped on. But here we are, however many days later, and we're still learning how
to figure it out.
Yeah.
I think it's...
Yeah. We've always kind of known it to be on that list of challenges, mm-hmm. but it's been more of a challenge
than what
we thought.
It's exaggerated, too, because all the birds we've heard and seen are relating to bottoms.
Yep.
So when you're up on the top, you're way away from that bottom. And, like, I would say every bird has flown down, hit a bottom, and even if they've gone up to, like, a smaller ridge... or a little stadium ridge within a pocket, they've hit a bottom and gone up to it. So they're pretty low compared to a lot of the access and a lot of the good ridges that you would consider good listening points.
Yeah, and I think maybe later in the season, the turkeys will start to go up as mm-hmm. things start to green up at higher elevations, mm-hmm. but...
just the way it is right now, it's certainly exaggerated.
Yeah, because in some hunts, I mean, honestly, we haven't hardly said it this year because we haven't experienced it, but... we started making the joke several years ago now, sun come up, and that's in reference to a lone turkey walking his butt up to the top to just hammer gobbles. And when they're doing that, it becomes A, easier to hear them because they're gobbling from essentially a listening point for us. And also, they're alone and they're way more willing to move in the direction of a hen. So calling them is much easier. But we have not experienced a single sun coming up except for the bulldoze bird. That's the only one. Yep. And that was the first day. And he probably learned real quick after y'all bumped him that season's now open. But
yep.
I think as that elevation, the higher elevation starts to green, which it is, which we've talked about, it's starting to change. You're going to start seeing more turkeys breaking up, hens going to nest, Tom's starting to get alone and gobble later into the morning, go up to those high points. So these tactics may even change, but we do know for next time, in a situation similar, it may be in a totally different state. It could be in Maine in mid to late May that you're experiencing these same conditions. But if you're in a similar situation down the road, you know for next time. And I think that's the thing, too. It's like, if you always go to the hot spot and you never experience a challenge, you're going to have a harder time learning these things. And then when you do hit these challenges, you're not going to be able to keep your confidence and keep having fun. I think that's the biggest thing, too, is like we've been able to continue to have a blast this entire time, even though it's been, I mean, this is top three, baby, of like toughest things I've done in the turkey woods.
Yeah.
Like this is going down in the memory books of like, whoa, that one was a struggle. And we may end up having to come back someday, you know, like just to try to figure it out again, because who knows? Yeah. We're hoping that we're going to get on something, but who knows? With the rain and the conditions, you know, we haven't really hunted at all today. So it's just it's tough. It's tough. And we know that. And that's what we want. We want to experience tough.
Are the turkeys tough, though?
No.
Like the conditions and time of year and and just being new to, like, and all that. I think at some point it's going to click, and there's going to be a lot of easy turkeys running around.
Yeah.
And then it's probably going to get a little tougher after that.
Yeah.
When a lot of
when
those
some
get
of them get missed.
Killed, missed.
Yeah. And I just think, I guess my belief is, having hunted in, you know, a lot of different regions and even different subspecies, it's like some turkeys have slightly different tendencies, but like I've listened to Easterns gobble just as much as a Merriam's. I've listened to quiet Rios. I've listened to, you know, Easterns that gobble and run the other way that do exactly the same thing as a Merriam. Like a turkey is a turkey at the end of the day, in my experience. And like I think that if you go enough, you will eventually agree with that. You know, I think you can have certain experiences where it's just like, that's the easiest place to ever hunt. But it's like, I've had experiences that are contrary to popular belief for the area. Whether that's it's supposed to be really bad and it's really good, and it's supposed to be really good and it's really bad. I've had both of that time and time again, over and over.
Yep.
And I
like
that.
Every situation's unique within within an area.
I mean, you can also just like roll right into a spot and shoot one. That's crazy. Doesn't happen that often. So like, enjoy it and embrace it. But at the same time, like, you know, sometimes it happens in the places that it's not supposed to happen in. And I think that just tells you a lot about, you know, a turkey's a turkey.
Yeah, and the fact that you can roll into like any place and shoot one is also proof that a turkey's a turkey. Like,
right.
If you know how to read how the turkey is reading their environment.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah.
I think anywhere you'll find that hunters are leaving the woods at like 9 or 10.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. I'd say for all species too, really.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like,
I mean, people have to work.
Yeah, absolutely. But
even still.
Yeah, like if you've got a Tuesday off, you know, maybe that's the day that you just, even if you want to sleep in, but hunt the rest, you know, the rest of the day out and focus on, you know, middle of the day just as much as you would beginning or end of the day. Or if you can only hunt evenings, don't be afraid to hunt evenings, you know, things like that and things like this.
Yep. In my experience, I feel like if you can get two all day sets in the wood,
yeah,
that's more valuable than if you can get like five mornings.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
if you can spend all of your time out in the woods listening and learning, mm-hmm. that I've found it to be a lot more valuable.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's so many times looking back on hunts where it's been this progression of going in, scouting, finding the sign, and then going back at a more prime time, even if you can only hunt one more morning or one more evening, whatever it may be, just finding that sign and going back in there with confidence at a prime time. Because I think one thing that's easy to do is, and this is, I'm speaking for all species here, not just turkeys. If you roll into a spot at the heat of the day, everything's kind of gone quiet, everything's either laying down, not gobbling, whatever, not doing anything, and you see this fantastic sign, and then your confidence just goes down when you don't get a response to your call, or you're set up in a funnel during deer season and nothing comes through. It's like, well, if it's blown up with sign, maybe just revisit it at that prime time. And you know, when that's been done, it seems like it just time and time again proves to be just the right approach. Like, go find that sign at less than ideal times and then revisit it when you've got a prime time. And I'll use an example of turkey. You're deep in somewhere middle of the day and it's like 2 o'clock, and all of a sudden you come across a saddle that's shredded with scratching. You find a dust bowl, you find strut marks, like there's a turkey that Tom going through there. You know it. But you get up on the high point and you hit a call, you hit a loud call, nothing responds. You're like, man, I know I should be spending time here, but I'm tired. You know, I ran out of food and I got the whole rest of the day. It's like, I would rather completely pull out, go get reset. Even if that's not even going back till the next morning, and then go in there at the prime time and be ready in that spot, knowing that when he gets to gobbling, you're going to be able to hear it, rather than like burn yourself out on it too, if that makes sense. Like, when you find that sign that's telling you there's definitely something here, then I say absolutely focus your time in prime time. That's what I think.
Yep.
There's just been so many examples where we've done that over the years and it's been very beneficial. But at the same time, if you got all the food and water in the world and you're planning on setting up there, like, yeah, just park it if you can. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying, don't burn yourself out on it, like hoping that all of a sudden it's going to let loose. Because if it is windy or really hot in the middle of the day and you're turkey hunting or deer hunting, whatever it is, yeah, I mean, they may just not come through there at that time.
Yeah.
But you shouldn't lose confidence on that fresh sign, because they're not going anywhere. They're not. No matter what anybody on the hunt media tells you, they're not leaving.
Yeah. And I didn't mean necessarily.
No, yeah, like, I don't think we're disagreeing either.
Just set in a place with
right.
good sign all for like 2 days straight.
No, I mean, know like, what you meant.
Be in the woods trying
existing,
to learn.
Existing mm-hmm. out there. Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
I think that also helps you get a gauge of what sign is the best sign that I can find. Like mm-hmm. you were
yeah.
saying about visiting more areas, that's going to help you hone in on what is the best spot that I should be at and should
yeah.
be focusing
my prime time.
Because
that's different everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For all species.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, it's hard to get that, especially for deer hunting, I would say. Mm-hmm. Just getting a grasp of how much sign deer are laying down. Turkeys is like, if you're finding tracks and feeding sign or scratchings of some sort, you know there's turkeys around. But
yeah, I feel like deer sign is weird, because over the years, having traveled to different areas deer hunting, you may go to one place and the standard for the amount of rubs you're seeing is super high. Like, we're talking like hundreds of rubs potentially. A lot of times I think that just comes down to the make of the trees or the deer density or kind of a combination. Like, if you got a bunch of willows in Iowa, for example, it's going to be shredded. You got a high deer density and they're trees that deer just rub in general. It doesn't really matter if they're a, you know, a year and a half old six pointer or a mega monster. They're rubbing those trees.
Yeah.
Where if you're in a setting like this, in the mountains, where you've got tons of timber, a low deer density, the buck sign that we've seen here is, I mean, man, we've walked several, like, 3-4 mile loops and seen a handful of rubs.
Yeah. But you find, and we find them and we point at them, we're like, heck yeah.
Yeah.
We find like 3 a day, but they're a pretty good sign of where that buck is probably spending a lot of the time, or it's in the really obvious cruising saddle rut sign. But we found a lot of spots where you can see where the buck is bedded, and that's the only spot where there's any congregation of rubs.
Mm-hmm.
A very small handful.
Yep. Yeah, and just like being able to come back here someday knowing that's what to expect is also helpful. One of my favorite parts about turkey hunting is knowing that someday there's a darn good chance I'm going to loop back to either this area, you know, this area meaning one of whatever, however many, like coming back to that area to deer hunt, or an area that's very similar, and you're getting those gauges every time too for deer. Like over the last, for sure, 2 or 3 deer or turkey seasons, I've started focusing on using this as my scouting time. Living in Colorado now, I don't have like the opportunity to scout out east nearly as much as I did, obviously, when I lived there. And now I just use this time to really focus on learning deer tendencies just as much as turkey tendencies in turkey season. And I'm constantly scouting for just how they're using the landscape. Like, how are they using this habitat and this terrain? That way, if I find myself in something similar, you can just have a similar expectation. And that's one thing that is also similar about deer hunters is to turkey hunters is they also like to say how different it is. And I was thinking about this the other day. It's like, been up in the Northeast a fair amount. Not a crazy amount, but I've been up there and I've attempted tracking up in the mountains there. And then you're here and you think, this is the same exact stuff, and they never get snow. It's like, you know, talk about a whole new added challenge. It's like you're just banking on snow if you live up in the Northeast, or you can bank on snow. I'm not saying everybody does that, but I mean, just keep in perspective that it's like there's always another list of challenges. And that's not to say one is harder than the other. They're all a challenge. This was not supposed to be easy from the beginning. If it was easy, then, you know, you'd build a fence and you'd keep them in there, you know, and that's not something that we're not trying to get that experience. If you wanted to just get a big buck every time, yeah, you just put a fence around them. But like, they're wild animals. They have an instinct to survive. They're not trying to, you know, the turkey's not coming in like, you know what, I'm going to go kiss that gun barrel. I'm going to make it easy this time. They're not thinking that. And with a deer, you know, obviously, like, they're not just going to come in and present you a broadside shot very often. That's just not realistic. And we do want that on occasion. I mean, absolutely, you're out hunting day in and day out, and you're not seeing anything. At a certain point, you're like, yeah, give me the gimme. I've been there for sure. I mean, I'm kind of there right now. As we sit in pouring rain. But, like, keep in mind that the challenge of it is what really is keeping you coming back. It absolutely is. And when you start to, I guess, you know, be okay with that, I feel that, at least for me, it has just made the whole experience that much more enjoyable. And that's why I love hunting new areas, man. Love it. Love going and getting a real good kick in the butt sometimes of like, hey, you got to learn more because this is different than what you've experienced. I like that.
Yeah.
Keeps you learning. You could just always go back to the same old, man. Old farm.
Might get tired of it.
Yeah.
I'd definitely get tired of it.
Yeah.
But you can always come back to it.
Right, yeah. Well, and it's going to make that hunt much easier, too. You're just going to be like, okay, like, this spot is going to be good in this situation or these conditions or whatever, where you may not look at it that way without, you know, broadening your experiences. Yeah. Yeah, it's really fun to go back to, like my grandparents' property or like your parents' property. I remember the first time after hunting in Iowa for a season, going back to your parents and standing there with Ben and being like, this whole thing's a cruising route. And we were just like, whoa, it is. And it just dawned on us that at that point, because it's like I had looked at it from a different perspective because I went and got a bunch of different perspectives that were in similar country. You know, a lot of what we were looking at in Iowa was similar to, you know, central Ohio, right? So, anyway, I don't know. I'm probably just getting to rambling, bull. Just rambling because it's raining and we can't go hunting.
We're just rambling.
Final thoughts?
Oh, I mean, it's still fun. It's always fun.
It's definitely fun.
It's fun to get your butt kicked.
Never really not fun.
No. Mm-hmm. Unless you're like soaked in the rain.
I was gonna say unless it's raining. We're on the verge today. It's not been great, but it's been all right. It's still, I mean, it's still fun. It is fun because we get to joke. We're joking with buddies, and you know, we're still getting to go outside, even if it's raining. But I'm hoping, that this is kind of the end of it.
Hop in the truck and cruise around a little bit till it shuts down.
Yeah, at least till it gets dark.
Yeah.
And we'll back, go to sleep, and then wake up in the morning and probably
go to Taco Bell and come back and
go see our friend James at Taco Bell.
Shout out.
All right, guys. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching, and see you next time.